Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Good morning, Damien O'Reilly with you between now and 12 o'clock on today's programme. As EU-UK relations continue to teeter on the brink over Brexit, Minister for Europe Thomas Byrne on today's summit between Joe Biden and Boris Johnson. More shortcomings in the Mother and Baby Homes Commission of Investigation regarding witness statements. Archivist Katrina Crowe will join us to explain. Barry Lenehan is in Mayo today to report on pyrite in houses there, and the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, will respond to this and the mica crisis in Donegal homes. Employment law expert Richard Grogan will answer questions about employees and employers' rights as we return to office working. As the vaccine rollout heads for 30 to 39-year-olds, pharmacists get ready to give the jab. Bookshops are back open, so what's flying off the shelves? We'll have some summer picks. And as we enter the first partial solar eclipse visible here for 4 years, we'll check in on how it's going. Email todaycb@rte.ie. You can text 51551 and you can tweet Today with Claire. Now, first, the Minister for European Affairs, Thomas Byrne, joins me on the line. Thomas, Minister, good morning to you. President Biden is expected to warn Boris Johnson not to imperil, as he puts it, the Northern Ireland peace process when they meet today ahead of that G7 summit in Cornwall. What are we expecting from this intervention?
Well, look, I think what we have seen in the peace process over the last 30 years is not only unionists and nationalists working together, Ireland and Britain, but the US and the EU have been fully involved, and all of us have been working together off the one page. And I think that's really what we want, and I think what everybody should want. And I suspect that's where the United States is coming from. I presume that they don't like unilateral action, that they prefer multilateral action, that they have a deep interest and concern in Northern Ireland, that they are strong friends of Ireland, but also that they're very close allies of the United Kingdom as well. And I think all of us are friends and neighbours, and I think that we need to continue to work together. I mean, that we're not asking anyone to get involved in a negotiation with Britain. What's happened here is that there's an agreement that's been concluded, and all we're looking for is to implement that agreement. And I think that needs to happen as quickly as possible, because I think the lack of certainty in Northern Ireland is putting it in a dangerous place at the moment.
But does Joe Biden's commitment to supporting the Good Friday Agreement, do you think that trumps Britain's belief that they have this so-called special relationship?
No, I think it's because of the special relationship that Britain has with America that America can, as we see in media reports, speak frankly to Britain. I think that's very, very useful. It's very useful between any two allies. So this shouldn't be seen as some type of disagreement or argument, but rather, I would say, a deep concern for all of the communities in Northern Ireland and the peace process, and a concern, I suppose, to keep their relationship intact. And when allies have disagreements, they try to come together, speak frankly to each other. I think that's what's happened. Look, I think the European Union has been really, really reasonable. We've tried to do everything possible to assuage British concerns. But I suppose the bottom line is that the protocol is there, has been agreed. And in fact, the protocol is working out pretty much as the British themselves foresaw when they published explainers on the issue back in 2019.
But what about the language that's been thrown around over the last couple of days, such as if the UK does not commit to the protocol, that trade sanctions may be introduced? I mean, that's not helpful language, really, is it?
No, we certainly, our view is that things should be kept calm. We want to keep talking because that always works. I think what the European Union are looking at, though, is that agreements have been reached. And, you know, if someone breaks an agreement, if you have a contract with anybody, there are usually consequences for breaking that contract. So the European Union has already instituted kind of warning letters or legal letters at the start of any such process like that. But what they've done crucially is maintain contact with Britain in the Joint Committee and the Partnership Council to try and work through all the issues that are there. And that's really the way I see these things being resolved. But what we have done is we've engaged with individual member states of the European Union. We've engaged with British parliamentarians, British ministers, but also with our American friends as well, to make sure they're fully apprised of the situation in Northern Ireland and on the island of Ireland as well. And I think that's something that we'll continue to do.
Now, there was a report swirling around yesterday as well, suggesting that in order to overcome the problems, that checks on all goods coming from Ireland into the EU would effectively be a solution. I mean, we're going back to a situation there of the EU throwing us under a bus if that was to happen. What was your reaction to that? And is there any substance to that suggestion as being a possible solution?
No, Damien, I can knock that on the head completely. There is no substance to that suggestion whatsoever. That is not legally possible to happen. And the European Commission said the same yesterday. So absolutely, that can be completely knocked on the head. It's simply not possible for that to happen.
But that sort of talk, and as I said, even the threats of sanctions and the mood music generally around those meetings involving Lord Frost and his EU counterparts, it's reminiscent of the worst days of the negotiations under Theresa May. Has the EU again lost control of the ball here?
No, well, the difference between the time of Theresa May and the time now is that their agreements have been reached with the Boris Johnson government. So Britain decided to have Brexit, Theresa May had negotiations, agreements that didn't work, proposals that didn't work. Now we have two agreements in place. We have the withdrawal agreement, the protocol agreed by Boris Johnson, we have the trade and cooperation agreement. That's all in place. And the talks that are taking place between Britain and the European Union are taking place under those agreements in the structures that are there. So that's what they're there for. But what we've got to make sure is that not only does the European Union comply with its obligations, which it is, and it's gone way above and beyond those obligations on our behalf and working with us, but we have to make sure it is in everybody's interests, and in the interests of peace, in the interests of no hard border, and in the interests of our place in the single market, which is so crucial to our economy, to our farmers, to our business, to our pharma industry as well. We've got to make sure the single market is protected. The European Union looks at those agreements and say, right, you're not doing this. We've been so generous to Britain in terms of what would be acceptable within the confines of the agreement. But there comes a time when you do need to bring certainty to this. And that's really the prize we're after at the moment, is certainty.
Do you think that Boris Johnson is minded maybe to go back to his pre-Prime Minister stance when he told the DUP that there would be no border down the Irish Sea? Do you think that he is of mind maybe to go back to that?
Well, look, it's what I would say is that the protocol is agreed. It's simply not possible for a sovereign country to go back on its agreements. It's simply not possible. And ultimately, I don't envisage that will happen because, you know, Boris Johnson has expressed interest in doing a trade agreement with the United States. The United States will be looking at British government and saying, right, if you make an agreement, are you going to stick with it? And that's a difficulty for Britain because they have seen what's happened here. But also in terms of that, the European Union has said very, very clearly that we're willing to do a veterinary agreement with Britain, like we have with some other member states, and we're willing to do it in a way that allows you to do a trade agreement with the United States. And that's a very generous offer. That's there. That would not only solve nearly all of the issues in Northern Ireland, but also solve a huge amount of issues for farmers in Britain, and actually would be a huge benefit to us as well.
So do you think that Boris Johnson is far more interested in doing a trade deal with the US if it means, I suppose, giving in to the EU as the UK would actually see it on the issue of the protocol and not extending the grace period beyond the June 30th?
Well, look, I can't read into Boris Johnson's mind, but I do know that he has publicly stated his desire for a trade deal with the United States, and we certainly have no objection. We will not stand in the way of that, and what you said is we'll actually help facilitate that in terms of a veterinary agreement. So really the offer from the European Union could not be any more generous than it is and would solve so many problems.
We have fresh legs on the field now in Northern Ireland when it comes to a new DUP leader and a new First Minister. We have Sammy Wilson of the DUP flexing his muscles again today, saying Biden's intervention is not welcome. We know that when unionists are backed into a corner, it doesn't always go well at the negotiation table, Minister. So how important is it that relations between the government and their counterparts in Northern Ireland now are, I suppose, repaired, because they are damaged, if you listen to what Edwin Putz has had to say, particularly about the Taoiseach, Minister for Foreign Affairs?
Look, I'm not going to get into that particular issue with those individuals, but what I do know is, and the Taoiseach has shown, is that relations between the North and South are absolutely critical, that they're maintained good. The same
That's my point. That's the question.
Yeah. And I think the Taoiseach have been working on that. Now, that's there's a lot of allegations going back and forth of it, and I don't think that helps the situation in any way. What we had there was, I think, a fairly private meeting between the Taoiseach and the DUP leadership. I think that was very welcome. What we wanted to do was dial down all of this. And what I can say and what I do know is that there is no such thing as winner takes all in Northern Ireland. So no one party, Republican or Unionist, is going to set the pace in Northern Ireland. It's always been about compromise, about working together. That's what the Good Friday Agreement is. It compromises on everybody's identity, but the protocol compromises too on the desire of the people in Northern Ireland to remain within the European Union and the desire of Britain to keep Northern Ireland within its customs territory. It's a complicated compromise, but it works and will work for the people in Northern Ireland.
Thomas, when you were a young member of Fianna Fáil, did you ever masquerade as a pollster?
Never.
Did it happen in Fianna Fáil in your time when you were a young party member?
I certainly have no knowledge of that whatsoever. I've never organised for a poll to be carried out. I've never taken part in a poll by myself or for anybody within the party.
But would you have been aware of it over the years? Were you surprised when the report was published yesterday about Sinn Féin and subsequently Fine Gael that they would have masqueraded as pollsters?
I heard of polls being done in my constituency over years, and quite frankly I often wondered how people did them, how they could afford to pay for them, how they could organise them, get people to do them. It always struck me as it's very important to get market research, but I always felt that if you wanted to succeed in politics, you're always better off working within your community and spending time doing that rather than spending a lot of time.
But come on, Thomas, there's no way you would have made your way to the position you are now in government if you did not know that this was going on, that your party were carrying out secret polls among constituents.
That's a very strong statement to make now. I've given you a very, very clear answer on that already.
So you're saying that over the years you were never aware of Fianna Fáil carrying out polls in constituencies, because it's a very important part of electioneering to know maybe who's going well and who's not, because we've often seen in the past people being taken off a ticket very late. Now that's down to some sort of internal polling going on, is it not?
Well, I can tell you that I have never carried out a poll. I have certainly never been shown a full poll in my constituency, and the party has said that since 2007, since I was elected, they've only ever done it professionally. So I have no knowledge of that whatsoever.
Well, your party colleague Mark McSherry thinks so strongly about it, he's called on the Taoiseach to resign.
Well, I just find that a little bit completely incomprehensible, because the party has said that we've only ever got professionals to carry out those polls since 2007. Micheál Martin is leader of Fianna Fáil since 2011. It's clear that all parties at various times in the past, and I'm assuming it doesn't happen now, have done these type of amateur polls, it sounds like. And I often wonder what the value of them was. As I said, the best value as a constituency politician is to just work hard for your constituents and work hard in the role that you're elected to, rather than simply doing market research. I mean, I personally take polls very seriously, but I take the science of polls very seriously. And quite frankly, I don't know what value you get from, I presume, doing a few hundred people in your constituency, how you would divide that up demographically, how you get all that. I just don't know how you would do it without professional backup.
Okay. Well, finally, Minister, before you go, the Taoiseach has said this morning that 70% of people will be vaccinated by the end of July. I'm just wondering, has he got his figures right here? How are we going to achieve that? Because I'm reading a report in the Irish Independent this morning, which says that we are still, while we're maybe aiming to vaccinate 200,000 people this week, it is still behind what the target was set at some weeks ago.
Yeah, but the target was set at 82% first vaccination at the end of June. If that's missed, and I don't know whether it will be or not, it'll literally be by days or a week. It'll be a very, very short period. So you're really, at that point, nitpicking. But there's no doubt that that's the target that Taoiseach has set for the end of July. Thankfully, supply has increased massively. There's a huge amount, I think it's probably almost 60% of the population. We don't have exact figures at the moment because of the cyber attack, but almost 60% have received a first dose. It's absolutely massive. And I think that it is real tribute to the organisation, the HSE, under the Minister for Health, and all our vaccinators around the country who are employed, and some volunteers who are doing tremendous work to get these out. And I think we have world-class levels of vaccination at this point in terms of where we are in league tables.
All right. And I know the rollout is commencing for 30 to 39-year-olds, I think, next week. And we'll have more on that on the programme later on. But for the moment, Thomas Byrne, Minister for European Affairs, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you.